Welcome back to this episode of the Knowledge Base Podcast. I'm Kate, your host. Today I'm back with another advisor chat episode. I'm sitting down with advisor Ben Westney, VP Wealth Management Advisor at World Investment Advisors. Ben specializes in retirement planning and shares a ton about his work and e-money that helps him be a successful advisor in planning for his clients' retirement. Without further ado, here's my conversation with Ben. Please be advised that this podcast contains purely educational information and nothing discussed may be construed as legal, tax, or financial advice. Please consult a financial advisor for any financial investment or money management questions. All views or opinions represented in this podcast are solely the opinion of the speaker and do not represent those of eMoney Advisor LLC or any of its affiliates. Hey, Ben, thanks so much for joining the Knowledge Base podcast today. I'm really excited to have you. Can you begin by telling our listeners a little bit about yourself and maybe a high-level overview of what you focus on as an advisor?
Hey, Kate, thank you so much. Glad to be here. Yeah. So my name is Ben Westney. I live in San Antonio. I'm from Texas also, from, you know, originally. I started my professional life in classical music. I was a cellist, and that's how I met my wife, and sort of did that for several years, and then decided that sort of needed a change there from that hustle, and got an MBA, got into finance, and found my way into this career. That was about 12 years ago, and I've been at this firm for almost 8 years. What we do here, it's mostly a 401k shop. And so the primary focus of our office and our the RIA that I'm with is defined contribution plans and other sort of group corporate retirement plans. And then I was offered the opportunity to come here just to focus on individual wealth management, financial planning. And that was an opportunity that I was very, very happy to take. And since then, we've really built out a very substantial wealth management division, and you know, with a lot more staff and managing directors and operations and other advisors as well, more CFPs. So we complement the 401k side of the business in that, you know, we can kind of take over where normal traditional retirement plan education and guidance and things, you know, you kind of have to tread the line there where you can't really give advice or make recommendations. And then we can kind of come in and work with individuals more specifically outside of the plan. And I say retirement plan, not financial plan, and help them with their individual financial planning needs. So basically I'm a retirement planner and I use eMoney pretty extensively in my day-to-day dealings with my clients.
We talk with a lot of advisors who have stories that are somewhat similar in the sense of they started in a field that is completely unrelated to financial planning. So I think it's so cool to hear that you were a professional cellist before being in the finance world. It's an awesome evolution to kind of learn about.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, I think it's, you meet all sorts of people in that world, but it's been very, very rewarding and interesting to be in this world and meet people outside of the fine arts and the performing arts and kind of learn everybody's story and different sort of personalities. And that's been, I would say, the best part of making that change.
That's amazing. Well, I'm sure it's a story that a lot of advisors listening will relate to in the sense of making that shift and, you know, going into a new career into the finance world, into financial planning. You mentioned, obviously, that you use eMoney, which, of course, is a huge focus of our conversation today. What is one way that your work in eMoney has really evolved since you started using it?
Yeah, I mean, I will say anyone just starting out using eMoney is going potentially like probably is getting overwhelmed by the level of detail and the amount of different powerful tools that you can use. It's almost like you don't know where to begin. And so that can be challenging. But and I was no different. I mean, I do remember, you know, spending a lot of time trying to sort of figure out what this thing does and how I can use it most effectively. So, I mean, over time, what I would say has evolved the most is the way the way I think you can shorten the process between gathering data from the client and producing something of real value for them that they can use to make financial decisions and really just to bring them peace of mind. So in that sense, it would be knowing what pieces of, like, what facts are really necessary and what facts are maybe not really crucial to the output of the plan. It would also be knowing which reports are, you know, can tell the story in the most concise way and which are really more sort of, I don't know, scientific or more technical and require a much, much more sort of involvement and explanation with the client. I mean, the one thing I've learned is just not much to do with e-money is that it's rare that you'll get a client that is so engaged that they will give you every document that you ask for in the fact finder and, you know, really happy to kind of do their homework, so to speak. And I, you know, just found it to be a challenge to try to sort of guide clients through that or wait for them to send me things or nag them to kind of get me this piece of information that I was asking for, and ended up, you know, kind of realizing over time that, like I said, not every piece of data has a meaningful impact on a long-term financial plan. Yeah, so I would say certainly just consolidating and making certain assumptions on certain types of facts really save time. And then also getting, you know, get the most meaningful sort of conclusion and output that the client can use. That process has been something that I've just worked to refine over the years, and I sort of feel pretty comfortable with that today.
That's amazing. Well, I think that that's something very common is just wanting to get the most out of the application, but also creating efficient processes. And I think that in itself is a learning curve because you have to really understand how the application as a whole works. And really only through time and experience are you going to find out, okay, what reports work for this type of client or what reports are going to give me the most information on X, Y, and Z to deliver the best plan for my client. So I think that hearing an advisor hearing you say that, especially one who's maybe newer to e-money, that's very valuable for them to walk away with, because I'm sure you're right, going back to your first question, like it is overwhelming potentially. Just there's a lot of information within e-money. There's a lot of different parts of the application, and there are so many different ways to use things. So I think it's kind of cool for them to hear, okay, maybe I could focus in on one part, see if that's helpful, and understanding that maybe there's a trial and error component in there as well to create a really robust but efficient financial plan.
Yeah, couldn't agree more.
Hey there, Kate here. We love making these podcasts for all of you, our listeners. Now we want to listen to you. What do you like about the Knowledge Base podcast? What do you not like? Please send us a message. You can use the form on the Contact Us page of the podcast's website, or just send us an email to knowledgebasecontent@emoneyadvisor.com. As we enter the podcast's third year, we want your feedback now more than ever. Now, back to my conversation with Ben. What parts of the application do you find yourself using the most, and why do you think you find yourself navigating to those parts of the application?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, you know, my use in e-money is like sort of an inch wide and a mile deep, as opposed to a mile wide and an inch deep. So, I mean, most of what we do is focused around retirement planning, not necessarily comprehensive planning, but we might have some educational modules that we'll put in, or, you know, education expenses. We might be modeling the sale of a company. You know, we might have some sort of other elements that we'll bring in. But again, most of it really comes down to retirement planning. I want to get the facts in as quickly and easily as possible. I don't outsource that. I do it myself. I mean, I could, but I just I'm comfortable enough, and it doesn't take that. It would take me longer to show someone else how I want it done than for me to just do it myself. I default to the advanced facts. I'll say that's one feature that I think is important for me. And then the other thing is really what I'm trying to do is get a cash flow report that is plausible based on the information the client's given me. And then I run through that with the client as I call it sort of a rough draft. And we run through all the facts together. We run through the initial output on the cash flow report, maybe drill down to some of the different column headings there, like income, expenses, things like that. And then we refine it further from there. Usually there's a second or third session that comes after that where the client provides me some more information. We dial it in a little bit better. So cash flow report is pretty fundamental to what I'm using it for. And I will also say the decision center is another major feature that I use with clients. And I will show it to clients even if we don't necessarily have a specific scenario that we're trying to model in there. But I will just show them, hey, here's something we can model. Here's how this tool works. And it's really powerful for them to see it, adjust their cash flow chart, the assets chart over time, just right there in the moment. And I say, okay, well, here's what would happen if you retired a year or two sooner. Obviously we know you would have a little less money over time, but here's what that looks like. And here's sort of the dollar amount. It kind of drives home the power of the tool to sort of take all these different data points, growth rates, expenses, in different scenarios and put them all into one very, very visually appealing and easy to understand chart. That's really what I want to use the system for the most. So it's basically that. It's very, very dynamic for me. I don't like to print reports. I almost never do that. And I don't want to give the client, module after module after module unless it really, really matters to their situation. In my dealings with clients, most people really are just looking for peace of mind. We're not trying to solve an equation and throw a dart into the future and hit a bullseye. That is pointless because all of the data points change every day. What we're trying to do is find trends that we can be very confident in. And using those tools, we can usually get there and feel really, really confident that we've built their plan today that is very, very close to what it actually looks like. And then using the cash flow report and the decision center, then we can show what that looks like over time and give them that peace of mind.
I love that you seem to have a really interactive experience for your clients. I mean, obviously you mentioned the decision center. You mentioned the cash flow report being a huge component of planning for your clients, but you really did reference, showing clients different things. And I would argue that that is such a key component in financial planning in terms of giving the client that peace of mind, because ultimately, the more the client knows, the more educated they are going to be on their financial outlook. So I just have to say, I think it's so great that, it seems to be a really interactive experience for you between yourself as an advisor and your client. Can you talk a listener through some of the first things you do with that client or for them in eMoney? I mean, at what point are your clients really given insight into the data that you're entering into the system and then like those recommendations that you give them based on that data?
That is a really sort of a good thing to get into here. So when I first meet with a client, it's kind of interview style. So when I'm gathering data from the client, initially it's conversational. They're just telling me kind of off the top of their head, and I'm asking obviously questions for what I need to find out. And of course, we supplement that with statements. Either I'll get the statements from the client beforehand or after our initial meeting, but I usually will get enough about their total assets and where they are and what form they take, their liabilities, what that looks like, what forms those take, their income, and that includes salary, but also we will go ahead and model Social Security. And I think one great thing about the eMoney tool is that it will calculate kind of a projected Social Security. But I do encourage clients and really ask them to register for Social Security, the website, and download a statement. So I get and then any other sort of data points that are relevant to their situation. And I take all that and I put it into the fact finder. Into the advanced facts in eMoney. That's on my end. That's after our first meeting. So between our first and our second meeting, or let's say whatever that meeting is and the next meeting, I'm building their rough draft of their plan. And so my next meeting with the client, I am going to walk them through the advanced facts, and I will either share my screen with them and show them what that looks like. You know, this is my eMoney. I'm just taking you through it. It's not very visually interesting, but this is where I can make changes. And I'll make changes on the fly. I'll have them look. I say, okay, we put this in here. We're assuming a growth rate of X. Or you've got this pension. I'm going to assume a 1% cost of living increase. What do you think about that? Or here's your living expenses. We're going to assume inflation of 3%. Where do we fall on that? And that allows us to kind of, like I said, dial it in and get to that point where the client feels comfortable that we have actually captured very accurately. And when I say very accurately, I would say within 90-95% of their current financial position within the tool. And that includes not just the numbers today, but also very, very realistic and believable growth rates and trends that we're going to use in the future. If they tell me a living expense number, I'm generally going to add something to that. I'm going to say, look, there's expenses that you just don't account for. Or really what I like to do is work backwards from their total income and, less expenses and taxes and deductions and things like that. And then, whatever their take home income is, if there's a difference between that number, it's usually more than whatever living expense they tell me, I'm going to go with my number and be like, well, to me, I see that you have this amount of take home income. I'm just going to assume for our planning purposes that money all gets spent, whether you are accounting for it in your living expense number or not. So that's our conversation that we have around that. I show them the cash flow report, and this is kind of where the rubber hits the road in terms of, are we going to be okay? Based on your current retirement projection, it looks like you either will or will not have enough money to, for the rest of your life. And one quick note on that, I always use age 100, or sometimes I'll use 95 for a man and 100 for a woman, but I try to pick dates in the future. Again, we're not trying to predict when they're going to pass away, but we just want to build it so that, hey, it's an unlikely scenario that both of you would live to 100 or 95 or 100. That's very, very unlikely. So if we can build a plan that will meet that need, then we can be, you'll probably die sometime before that, and you will have had enough money to make it that far. Some of those, I would say, just stylistic points about financial planning are important. I share all of those with the client, like padding their living expenses, using their take home and assuming that they're going to spend it on something that they're just going to find a way to spend that money. And then, the longevity piece. Longevity is a huge risk. And what we're trying to do is plan for these risks. Longevity risk adds to all other risks that people will face in life. So we want to make sure the plan can sustain that. So again, I'm still doing this with the client, either in my office on the screen, or we're on a Zoom call or something like that. And I'm sharing my screen. And again, I'm making sure the client understands every step of the way and agrees with what we're doing. And then when we view the results, it makes sense and it all comes together. So that's sort of the initial stage. And then usually that's enough. I mean, at some point, they might have other things, other pieces of information that they need to get me. I can add to that later, or just following up that meeting. And that's usually when I will invite them to the client portal. After that point, once we've got it built, and I feel like, we've, in essence, completed their retirement scenario in a way that they can believe in, then I'll invite them to the portal. One reason, like we talked about before, that I like to do it interactively with the clients is, just as an advisor, I want the client to think of this as a process that we do together. it's good for business and it's good for our relationship if this aspect of our advisor-client relationship is something that is collaborative. And it always will be that way. And then they know, okay, if I have a question about something, first thing I'm going to do is go to Ben and ask, you know, if we can look at that in any money, as opposed to giving them a completed plan that they can take away. And, you know, it sort of puts it more on their shoes where it's like, okay, we feel like we've done this and we can cross it off the list. But if it's something that is really, they kind of, I don't want to say they need to come to me to be able to use it, because like I said, they have access to the portal throughout. But it's just something that they want to come and talk over with me, because it's, you know, it, like I said, it makes sense. It's sort of something that, you know, we build it together and I'm really sort of on their team as they're figuring all this stuff out.
Absolutely. Well, it sounds too like you do really implement that realistic component. You know, when you're talking about living expenses, for example, they give you a number and you say, okay, I'm going to add to that because yeah. The reality is maybe they don't have an accurate or an adequate idea of what that number really does look like, or they don't think about those little things that kind of creep into that living expense number. And yeah, that is the reality of financial planning for those maybe unexpected things, or they might not be accounting for all of the little nitty gritty details that you as an advisor can take a step back and look at the plan and say, okay, we need to account for some of yes. these things.
Kate, you're absolutely right. And this goes back to my earlier point about knowing what is really important to drive the sort of long-term projections within e-money and what isn't. I will say the first thing that I moved away from as I was sort of learning how to really use this software for me was just tearing my hair out trying to figure out what living expenses are and having the clients do this and looking at budgets and what's above the line, what's below the line, and itemizing every single kind of, you know, small debt that they have. I will itemize their debts, obviously, you know, student loans, mortgage debt, but there's other things that where, you know, if it's a car loan and you've got a year left on it, or, you know, just some, I would say, you know, the more granular level of living expenses are, to me, it's not worth the time to get into that area with the client. Let's just pick a catch-all number. We know that this is, you know, you're going to need more or less this much to live on. Okay, you paid off your car. That's great. Well, you know, what happens to cars that you paid off? Well, now you have to start buying tires and have repairs, and the older cars get, the more expensive they get. So let's just assume you're going to be spending money on that kind of stuff anyway. So it's not really necessary to get too deep into the weeds on at that level. And that just helps you for your own sanity as an advisor to not really get too bogged down in those granular details when really it doesn't make a meaningful impact on the client's long-term outlook.
Right. And I think it gives you the best opportunity to help them plan for those scenarios without losing sleep over it for them or with them.
That's right. Yeah. We have a term in music that's called, you call it faking. And what faking means is, you know, let's say you play 98% of the notes, but there's a few of them that, like, you know, they're really, really tricky and nobody's going to hear it because you're part of an orchestra or it's just kind of a little fiddly section or something like that. And so, you know, you kind of play it sort of, but you don't obsess over each little note there, because it doesn't make a difference to the overall impression of the music that you're playing. So, I think that applies here, you know, yeah, you do a little bit of faking, but it doesn't change the output. It doesn't change the meaningful. And I would say it doesn't really change the accuracy. That's the most important thing.
Right.
I don't want anybody to get the impression that I'm not trying to be as accurate as possible. I'm trying to be as accurate as possible in things that are meaningful and things that we can measure, things that really are going to impact the client's long-term prognosis. And that's really the approach here. But yeah, at the same time, we got to get this thing done. The client doesn't want to meet with me 20 times and we're going to go crazy if we have every single tiny little piece of data down to the penny. And again, everything changes by the day. Like tomorrow, all the investment numbers will be different and nobody knows what is actually going to happen. So we just want to build it so that whatever may happen, we have a very high level of confidence that the plan is going to be able to work.
Right. And the reality is you do have all of those kind of unpredictable factors that occur throughout the client's life that you cannot necessarily plan for, which I will say the one feature within the application that really does lend to that is what ifs. So how does using that feature come into play for your clients?
Yeah, I mean, what ifs are important. And I mean, the way that I go about that is usually using the decision center and like advanced planning. Usually it has to do with sort of a few sort of main ideas. Can I retire earlier or do I need to work later? You know, that's sort of the main lever you can pull with the client if they're pre-retirement. It's when do they stop working? The other thing is it could be growth rates of investments. Could have a client that is overly conservative and I'm trying to nudge them in the direction of taking more risk and showing over time the impact that can have. You know, so many people get focused on the short-term volatility in the markets and sort of, you know, don't feel comfortable having risk in their portfolios, even if they sort of objectively understand that their money grows more the more risk you take over time. But seeing it on paper, you know, showing A versus B, here's where you're currently at, here's where you would be if you took a bit more risk in your portfolio, but we're talking over decades, it can make a meaningful impact in their scenario. And the other things are going to be buying or selling of property. You know, some people have a real estate portfolio or they might have assets or a business and we need to model, okay, well, what happens if you sell it for this much? What happens if you sell it for that much? What happens if you can't sell it at all and you just need to close the doors and walk away from it? I mean, that happens to some business owners who I do retirement planning for. I mean, I've been through that with some people. And so those what if scenarios are, I would say, the most important things. I mean, occasionally I'll do early mortality, right? Early death. I don't really do much in the way of life insurance, but I would say that's an area that is a huge use of the what if scenario. It could also be long-term care insurance. That's one thing people are oftentimes when they're getting to their 50s and 60s and maybe really starting to look seriously at retirement planning, life insurance is less of a need, but long-term care coverage, whether it's self-coverage or whether it's through insurance, that's something that I think is a what if scenario that I've used frequently, which is, you know, just model some you know, medical and assisted living and those kinds of enhanced expenses that people face if they live to be old and frail and need some kind of care. So then you can have a discussion around, you know, how do you handle that? How do you cover that? So yeah, those are the big areas that the what ifs are good for. You know, not just the basic, hey, here's your retirement plan, you're going to be okay, but let's look at some other things. And one last quick point on that, I usually will ask clients if their parents are still living and if they have to provide any support for them. You know, that's just how you can uncover that need, even if maybe they aren't thinking about it. So for some people it's top of mind, but for other people it might not be. But that's an excellent thing to sort of have them look at. It also expands the conversation into estate planning. And it's just in general, it's a good avenue to go down with a client to sort of use some of these other areas that we need to be discussing with our clients.
Totally. And I would imagine too, that looks different from client to client. I'm sure if you asked that question to a client who's 30, their answer might look a lot different than if you ask it to a client who's 50. And
exactly.
Those different nuances from client to client can really play an impact. And I'm sure that their answers can really make a difference in that whole financial peace of mind that you were talking about earlier, because maybe it's something they didn't think of even before. And now having these conversations are really sparking some, oh, I didn't even think I would need to, you know, consider, do my parents need care? and what that looks like, you know, maybe if it's not today, but maybe it's 5, 10, 15 years from now.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. That, I think that's our job as advisors. I'm not necessarily looking to accomplish that specific thing, but I think it is in my mind that, you know, I definitely want the clients to feel like by working with me or any other advisor in my firm that they're getting true value for, you know, not just, okay, we're trading in your account and managing your portfolio, but that we're helping you to handle your financial business in a way that maybe you wouldn't have thought to do on your own, adding that level of extra value and benefit that, to them. I mean, it's good for everybody to have that kind of thing taken care of. So yeah, I totally believe in that.
Well, building trust is an essential part of the advisor-client relationship. How do you feel using e-money in planning for your clients is helping you do that?
For me, the concept of building trust with a client starts from our very, very first interactions. And I try to sort of bridge that gap as quickly as possible in a, I would say, a very deliberate way, and not necessarily tell the client really that this is what's going on. But I definitely want to start asking them questions that maybe they wouldn't tell just anybody, kind of in the early part of our interaction. So e-money is a perfect way to sort of get there, because there's things that we're going to need to ask that they probably wouldn't tell most people, such as their salary, those kind of things, or the value of their assets. For me, hopefully by that time, I've already gained enough trust with the client that they have no hesitation whatsoever in sharing those kinds of information with me. But I will say, by the time we get through all of the facts that I need to gather to be able to make their plan, then they definitely are a open book. And anything that comes up from that point forward, is they're kind of willing and I would say eager to share it with me, because they know that I need to know that. Like, again, it's kind of like it's the collaborative nature of financial planning, at least the way I see it, that they want me to know that information, because then we can make sure their plan is as up to date as possible, and make sure that they're still in the same situation that they thought they were in, even with something new that has changed. So to me, that is, e-money is there as a reinforcement of the level of trust that we share. So yeah, I really use it heavily, and it helps in that regard.
That's great to hear. I would say that is arguably the most important thing between an advisor and client, and obviously you know that firsthand, just building that trust and making sure that that client feels comfortable, because you're right, it is such personal information. You're not necessarily going to a dinner party talking about your salary.
No.
But
you hope not.
Right, exactly. You hope not. But there is a level of trust that really does have to be there. So we've talked a lot about Decision Center. I know it's a key component that you really use throughout your work with clients. What specific reports are you using within Decision Center that you find really provide the most data and visibility into retirement planning for clients? I think that knowing that is a real great takeaway for other advisors who are listening, who maybe do a lot of retirement planning themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, I mean, I kind of stick mostly to the primary sort of the assets report, the assets over time, sort of that same chart that you see on the cash flow report. I will generally not use Monte Carlo. I know it kind of sounds like heresy in the financial planning world to say, yeah, I'm not a fan. It's not that I'm not a fan. I think Monte Carlo is great, maybe for us, for me. You know, and it's nice to be able to quantify a probability of something happening or not happening. But I truly do stick to the assets report that is sort of the default there, and just use that sort of dynamically, where, you know, we change a variable up or down and it affects the chart over time. And that is, you know, for most people that I work with, these are going to be middle class people, because we're working with a lot of 401k participants who are retiring. I will work with a lot of our executives and business owners, but still everyone's in a fairly similar shape, with regard to their money, but not sort of the ultra wealthy who have their own sort of separate needs. But I would say your regular client with a healthy retirement account balance and, I would say a stable retirement who would consider themselves probably wealthy, but, they might have between $1 and $3 million of wealth. I'm just picking that number off the top of my head, but, kind of an average there. But my point in bringing all this up is to say, when I look at their cash flow sort of simulation or the assets report, and again, we look at this in the decision center quite often, they will typically, just due to required distributions and, let's say required distributions at a certain point in life will start to exceed the level of investment growth that we are modeling. And that can often be when the assets stop going up or they sort of taper off and then they start to come back down. And this is a very, very common shape. I call it the turtle. So I talk to these clients and be like, yeah, you have a, so they'll see that and they'll be like, oh, it goes down. It looks like it comes down at the end and you just hope that it doesn't go down and cross the axis, the x-axis before you die, right? But I say, no, this is a very normal shape. This is the turtle. And yes, it's go up, they kind of level off and then they come back down and, 85% of sort of regular middle-class retirees are going to have that pattern in their retirement projections. But if we can move around the variables enough to get that thing to go either, to not come back down or to keep going up, that's just great. That's great for a client to see. But yeah, like I said, I get a lot of mileage out of that particular report there in the decision center. That's pretty much where we begin and end. And that's usually quite enough for the clients. Once a client has put their mind at ease, I don't find much benefit in continuing to kind of hammer technical reports and force them to kind of pay attention to things that they might no longer be interested in that conversation. So, we're probably also maybe a good hour in at that point and everyone's got a kind of an attention span limit. And so I'll make sure I'm getting the most, I want them to be engaged. I want them to really care. I want them to understand and get value from it. And anyway, that's how I go about that.
Well, I think that's important too for advisors to understand is, that attention limit, like that attention span. What's going to keep that client engaged? Because engagement is a huge part of it. You don't want the client to start to lose interest or, not listen to what you have to say. Because, of course, what you are saying brings value to the conversation. And you want them to be engaged and have a strong understanding. So with that, what is one piece of advice that you have for the advisor who's just getting started in e-money?
Yeah, I have a lot of things I could say, as you can imagine. I sort of, you just kind of wind me up and I'm happy to, just kind of go off here. But to me, you need to really do it all from end to end several times in the beginning. Do your own data entry. Make sure you understand how every aspect of it works, at least the aspect that's relevant to your business. Don't try to outsource data entry at the beginning. Don't try to outsource the planning to a paraplanner or somebody else who's maybe can do that work. I would say do it yourself. Get in there, roll up your sleeves, really understand how all the variables work and how they impact the final product. And then once you understand that, let's say you do 10 plans and, everybody's different. So you're going to use it in different ways and have to kind of tap into different aspects of the software, you'll understand kind of what's most relevant for you. And you'll be really like a power user of those areas of it. And then, if you want to outsource that kind of stuff on the front end to somebody else, that's great. But then you'll know what you need to get out of it. And you'll know how it works so that you can get your own, your output is going to be relevant to the message that you're trying to deliver, the story that you're trying to tell to your clients. And if you're in insurance, that's going to be one thing. If you're in investments, that's going to be another thing. If you're doing comprehensive planning for a flat fee, not exactly something I recommend for everybody, unless that's a business plan, a business model that you've really, really thought through. I don't do that kind of planning. I've done it in the past, but again, that get it to that level where you're very comfortable as a user of the software. And then you will discover, where do I need to be as accurate as possible, and where can I fake? Where can I fake it a little bit just so we get a result that is meaningful, isn't going to change. If a client has a savings account and you put the cash growth rate at 0.62% or 1% or 0%, like, I don't care. It doesn't really matter. Don't waste time on that. That's the kind of thing that however much cash they have in their savings account isn't going to affect their long-term plan unless they've got hundreds of thousands of dollars in cash that has no use. And you need to tell them to invest that money in some way. Obviously, then you've got the ability there to model a scenario where they invest that cash and it makes them much wealthier over time. That is the goal here. We want our clients to be as wealthy as possible over time. So I would say do it yourself at least at first until you are sick of that, and then you can have someone else do it for you because you know what you need to get out of it.
Yeah, I think it's interesting to see when an advisor starts in e-money, it's so easy, like you mentioned earlier, to get overwhelmed. But hopefully, if there are advisors listening today who are newer to using the application, they can kind of walk away with some of those key takeaways and have a better understanding of where to start. On the flip side of that, as an advisor who is heavily focused on retirement planning, what is one technique or feature with e-money that you think every retirement planning focused advisor would benefit from utilizing, whether they're brand new in e-money or maybe they are more experienced in the application? What is like one technique or feature you'd say you should be using this if you focus on retirement planning?
To me, the beginning and the end is the cash flow report. I mean, I know this may not be groundbreaking news to anybody, but just mastering that and understanding how everything flows into that, making sure that you can make that look the way that it needs to look. It has to be believable. It has to kind of pass the smell test. Like if you put in a middle-class client's data and it shows them with $15 million, at the end of their life and it just goes to the moon. I mean, okay, something is wrong. Like, it's a way to check yourself. But each individual column heading, click into that, dig into that, understand how everything is impacting the final number there. That'll send you off in whatever direction that you need to. If you need to correct something, or you want to build a hypothetical scenario, or you need to build a scenario that delivers a sales pitch to a client, that's certainly a legitimate use of this tool. Then I think it all starts from there, whether that's what you're showing to the client full time or not, but at least for your own benefit, understanding, say, okay, this is plausible, this is believable, I've done this right. Their financial plan is accurate, and the cash flow report will show you that. And yeah, like I said, whatever direction that kind of leads you off into, you can go there. But that, I think, to me, that's the beginning for every advisor is to kind of check your work and make sure that you've done it in the right way to be able to then leverage all the other tools that are in e-money that are going to help you deliver your message to the client.
That's great advice. I know we have a lot of advisors who do focus heavily on retirement planning. So it's awesome that we're leaving them with that advice today. Ben, thank you so much. This was such a great conversation, and you had so much to share on how you utilize different parts of the application, retirement planning, and it's definitely advice and insights that I think a lot of other advisors will connect with. So thank you.
Well, it's been my pleasure, Kate. It's been fun talking with you this morning.
That's a wrap on another Knowledge-Based Podcast episode. Thanks so much for listening. To tune in to more upcoming episodes, be sure to subscribe. Head to the Help menu, find Knowledge-Based Podcast, and use our QR code to be notified on all episodes as we release them. We'll catch you on another episode soon.